Hi there, I'm Niall Kahn, and this is the PPRO podcast. PPRO helps millions across the world pay and get paid for goods online. And PPRO is a part of the larger fintech industry, and this industry is constantly in flux, and at times can seem quite opaque. In each episode, I sit down with some of the expert voices from within PPRO to explore and hopefully illuminate an area of the fintech industry. Unlike paying for goods in a store, how your money ends up with an online merchant is rather mysterious. And like so many things in e-commerce, the simpler it is, the more complex technical knowledge there is behind it. That's why I'm really pleased to sit down this week with Jorn Vanka, one of PPRO's engineers, to break down the technical details of how online checkout actually works and some of the challenges that different payment methods offer. And now, Jorn Vanka. And Jorn, what do you actually do at PPRO?
So I'm an engineering manager at PPRO, taking care of the payments services team. That means the whole main transaction gateway, as well as the different payment integrations.
And so today we're going to be talking about how we check out online and how checkouts can differ from merchant to merchant, right?
And as well as the general flow, basically.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So can you give me a brief overview of how checking out at a merchant works?
Sure. So I think the first important thing to keep in mind is the different parties that are involved on a checkout normally. So first off, obviously, we have the customer who actually wants to buy something online. We have the merchant, which, you know, has the shopper's page, basically, as well as then the actual payment method they want to use. This could be a credit card, you know, MasterCard, for example. In our case, it's often alternative payment methods. And then we can have a fourth party, which is called a PSP, a payment service provider, which you know, acts kind of like as a gateway between these merchants and the payment methods. And so how does the checkout actually work? It's kind of straightforward. The you know, the customer, he goes on the merchant's page. He clicks on, well, he first enters his, or like fills his basket, you know, with all the fancy goods he wants to buy, then clicks on pay or checkout. And this is all happening on the merchant side so far. You know, you then have to like enter your address, the customer has to enter his address, all on the merchant side. And then the important or interesting part actually starts when he starts clicking on pay, right? Because then what happens is, you know, you wanna take this order, you wanna take this transaction details and kind of confirm that the payment from the customer is actually valid, that he's like a, you know, solid guy, perhaps has a good credit rating, depending on what payment methods he wants to use and so on and so forth. But that's basically where he is getting involved. So the way a normal flow works is the merchant basically now has this all this information from the order and wants to forward or is going to forward that information to the PSP, so the payment service provider.
And now, why wouldn't a merchant accept the data themselves? Why do they have to use a PSP?
They could process the payment itself, but if they would want to do that, depending on the type of payment method they want to use, they might need to have contracts. They might need to have you know, accounts in different countries. So let's say you want to have like a Chinese payment method, you might need a Chinese bank account. You might need to technically integrate all of them yourself. And again, you might have to have legal contracts with all of these different payment methods. So this is really where the USP of a payment service provider comes in. Also, it's really often not the core business of a merchant, from my perspective, to say, hey, you know, I'm going to take care of the payment itself. Because what do they want to focus on? They want to focus on the service they offer. They want to focus on the goods they want to sell. They don't want to like have to deal with all of this payment. So they are quite often happy to have like a small fee for a PSP to take care of the payment, basically.
That's all really interesting. But let's move back to the checkout process. So at this point, the consumer is at the checkout. They've entered their information, and now they're redirected to another service? Or how exactly does this work?
Yes. So, well, as a first step, the order basically gets sent to the PSP. This includes, like, the details, like the amount, the currency, can contain the information of the shopping basket, for example, address, like all kinds of stuff. And then the PSP might do multiple things with it. He might first do some risk checking, for example. He might also, for example, take care of address validation. And then depending on what the customer selected, he might forward that information to the payment methods that the customer had selected. For example, a customer might select the Dutch payment method Ideal, and then basically, you know, you would, like, the PSP would send that information to Ideal and also basically tell them, hey, here is this transaction coming in. Do you have any concerns about that already? So Ideal might also do some kind of, again, risk checking, address validation, and so on and so forth. At this stage, there's no redirection yet. It's just like this initial, you know, kind of heads up, hey, here's something coming in. Do you see any problems with that?
Okay, so just to recap, at checkout, the consumer's information is first sent to the PSP, and then depending on what kind of payment method they're using, the information is further sent to that payment method to double check.
Exactly.
And this is all happening on the merchant's webpage.
This is all happening on the merchant's webpage.
Okay.
So this is the initial step. And then what happens is when the payment method says, hey, yes, this is actually likely going to be a valid transaction, the payment method sends back that information to the PSP. And the PSP will then send that information back to the merchant. And part of the information that is added by the PSP is some kind of URL where the consumer should get redirected to from the merchant. So basically, this will be then the step where, you know, in your browser as an end user, as a shopper, you would realize that when you click on the pay button, you will actually leave your merchant's page, so your Amazon.com, for example, and you will be redirected to another URL, something like ideal.nl, so somewhere off the merchant's website. And so this information where to actually redirect the customer to is returned from the payment method to the PSP to the merchant, and the merchant relays that information to the shopper's browser.
And why does a shopper have to be redirected to another website? Why can't it all just take place on the merchant's checkout page?
It's often a security feature, basically. So there are payment methods where it can actually be embedded within the merchant's URL.
Usually like a credit card, for instance, right?
Credit card, depending on the security feature. So you have features like 3D Secure for credit card, for example, where you might have added functionality in terms of security, and that would also mean you will be redirected. So this can also depend, for example, on the amount of your transaction. It can depend on, again, what country you're in and so on and so forth. But generally, you would probably get redirected to fulfill your transaction on whatever payment method is getting done.
And why is that more secure to be redirected?
Look at it from this perspective. So like the way how a browser works is basically a browser can say, hey, all of the content that I'm displaying now to the customer needs to be from the same URL. So this is like every image, every CSS, every HTML snippet I display needs to be from Amazon.com. And so this is like the most secure setting, because everything else which might come in from anywhere else will basically get rejected. If you actually do want to display it, also the checkout or the payment on the merchant side, so embedded within the Amazon.com, they would basically need to allow accessing content from third parties. So once you open up like this general possibility of allowing third-party content on your own website, who knows what you might get in from, you know, angry attackers, basically. So it's kind of like a general best practice to say, hey, I'm not actually allowing content from anywhere else unless I absolutely have to, and unless I have very specific requirements there. So something like Google Analytics, for example, you might still want to allow anyway, but it's a very fixed, defined set. Whereas if you're really going through, you know, like a PSP, which then might offer different payment methods behind it, you might not even know what URLs you might have to come from. So you can't actually say, hey, also allow Google DE on my website, but you would have to whitelist ideal.nl, you would have to whitelist BankContact, you would have to whitelist whatever schemes there are. That list becomes very quickly not maintainable, basically.
Okay.
That's kind of like the rationale behind it. The merchant redirects to the customer's browser the redirect URL, and then the customer's browser basically decides to, or gets redirected to this URL either of the PSP or of the scheme of the payment method directly. This is quite varying depending on the payment method. I would say I would first go with the one where it's actually getting redirected to the PSP, Because what happens there quite frequently is that, so now the customer is basically getting redirected to this URL, and that URL might, for example, have a list of all the banks which are available for a particular payment method. So as an example, Ideal, again, this Dutch payment method has around 12 issuing banks at the moment. And if you, as an end consumer, want to use Ideal, you need to select which bank you are actually having your account on. And basically, this is getting done by this extra page, which is served from the PSP.
So the consumer is no longer on the merchant's page. They're on a PSP's page.
Mm-hmm.
And they give their money or information to the PSP. How does the money get back then to the merchant?
So just to clarify, they don't necessarily give the money to the PSP, but they would, for example, give the money to the scheme. So like to Ideal, right, in our case. And the interesting part, like you said, is that now you are on the Ideal page. And the question is, how does the merchant know that you actually paid on the Ideal page now? Because you are on the Ideal page, you're not on the merchant's page anymore. How does that information, get back to the merchant and then to the customer, basically? And so the way how it works is that the payment method gets what we call a notification URL, which it is supposed to call once the payment has been completed from the payment method's point of view. So what this would mean is, let's say you, Niall, order at Amazon.com for 100 euros at Ideal. Like we as a PSP might say, okay, the notification URL for your transaction is prepro.com/ideal/Niall100 euro at Amazon. So something like that. And so basically then once you do the payment, Ideal now actually makes an active call to this URL, which PPRO provided you. And that way we as a PSP now understand, okay, payment has been done, accepted, money is going to be there, and we are happy to proceed. And then we basically give that information back to the merchant, which either will have provided us with a similar URL or will, ask us, let's say every hour, hey, has this transaction been successful? You know, at some point, basically, once we receive that transaction, we will then tell them, yes, it has been successful now. And this is then the cue for them to say, yes, the merchant can be assured that he's getting the money. So he can now actually, serve out the service, or he can serve the goods to the customer and start shipping them. I mean, I was talking now about several hours. Normally, this is a matter of seconds or maybe multiple minutes. But where you will actually notice this as an end consumer is that that when you actually make the payment, you will normally get a message, thank you for your payment, in your browser. We will process your payment. And only, let's say, like 2 or 3 minutes later, you will get an email saying this payment actually has been successful now. And this is how you realize that, hey, actually, it's not really instantaneous when you, like at the second when you pay it Ideal, but it might be a minute later, it might be 2 minutes later, basically. So this is the explanation why the email comes a little bit later normally, because it is about the step about Ideal giving the information back to PPRO that the payment has been done, and then PPRO relaying that information back to the merchant.
Now, sometimes when you use a payment method that's cash-based, like Boleto Bancario in Brazil or Multibanco in mm-hmm. Portugal, that will take longer, right? So how does the system handle a longer pause in the payment process like that?
So that's one of the challenges we really have to deal with. And there's different ways how it can be done. And these can either be on a technical level or even on a business level. So on a technical level, obviously for us, we can say, hey, yes, we keep that transaction open for a week. And even after a week, tell the merchant, yes, this payment has been successful. That can be fine for a merchant if he is happy to hold on to this goods for a week before shipping them out. But he can also say, this is actually too long for me. So another way to do it is to say, hey, we only allow a maximum of 24 hours, for example, to pay. This would be like a conscious restriction on the payment method. And the last way to basically do it is, and this is the value add that a PSP might bring, is to say, we as PPRO, for example, take over the liability for this payment. meaning that we basically tell the merchant immediately, yes, the payment has been successful, but now we have the claim against the end consumer, and so we take on the risk, basically, and the payment guarantee.
And so you, as an engineer, you're creating partially the flow, right?
So we in engineering are, in the case of PPRO, acting more as the middleman, basically, right? So what we basically try to do is we try to combine these different flows that exist into one either unified flow, which we can offer to our customers, because ultimately they only want to have one integration. Or we basically say, and you know, in this case, deal with product, deal with business development, for example, to say, hey, these are value-added services we can offer for this particular payment method, and sell that to our customers. But that might not be the original way how the scheme works. So in the case of Multibanco, we could say, hey, we as people take on this this payment guarantee, and that way we can actually assure the merchant quite quickly, so not after a week, but really after 2 minutes, that yes, you know, he will get the money. Another good example for like a value-added service we would offer is refunds. So like a lot of schemes that we see in the industry are basically, you know, where you can make a payment to from a customer to a merchant, for example. So kind of like a C2B model. If you look at it from this merchant's perspective, they will have cases where the customer actually wants to reverse the transaction. So this is basically then called a refund. And so for a lot of these payment schemes, they don't actually offer refunds. They really only offer like the simple transaction flow. And so what we, in our case, have added as a value-added service is to say, hey, even for schemes which don't offer refunds natively, we basically add functionality on top so that from a merchant's perspective, they can also do refunds, which is another advantage for the Amazon example from earlier, because they actually get additional functionality. Or we do have a feature which, again, even if a scheme offers refunds, they might not add over refunds or not be able to handle over refunds. So over refunds are these cases where you order something. So let's take Zalando as a common example. Zalando, a big fashion chain in Germany, or fashion retail in Germany. What they do is they send like packages with lots of clothes and lots of shoes to customers. The customers can basically select which of these clothes and shoes they like and just return the rest of it. And so the way this looks from a transaction point of view is you have like an initial payment for like all the clothes, all the shoes. And then once the customer returns the wares, they would basically have a refund for the rest of the clothes and the shoes that they didn't want. What can happen, though, is that you would return all of the shoes and all of the clothes, get exactly the same amount of money back that you sent. But what Zalando also does is they cover the costs of the shipment, meaning that now if you pay, you know, €3 extra to basically send the return package, you actually want more money back than the original transaction. And this is something that not a lot of schemes or lots of payment methods basically offer, but again, which is something where PPRO, for example, as a value-added service, says, hey, besides this additional refund functionality we offer, we also offer the functionality of over refunds. So this is really, again, where like this value-added service comes in.
So you kind of take these payment methods and tweak them and make them a little bit better.
Essentially.
Okay. That's interesting. So why wouldn't the payment methods do this themselves? It seems odd that another company would come along and improve someone else's product and then turn around and sell it again.
They are acting in a different space. What these payment methods, so they will basically have different motivations. Payment method, for example, might really cater itself more to consumers. They might want to say, hey, please open an account with us for the consumer. And then they perceive something like merchants as a value-added service, basically, you know. So, for example, you have some payment methods which are focused more on a C2C model, sending your friends money, for example, for like a beer in the evening, you know. And then adapting that to, really like to a business model is not really in their first interest. They might want to do it later. But if they do it later, they then obviously need to update the API version and need to interest their partners to adopt these API changes, which for businesses is always like a big maintenance effort, which again, you know, like is the point where basically if I as Amazon would implement these 10 different payment methods, and they used 10 different payment methods, would keep changing the API, I would have to have a lot of maintenance overhead there. And that's, again, you know, where the advantage of this PSP basically comes in, where the PSP basically makes all of these changes behind the scenes, and the Amazons then only need to, like, make one change to the API, basically, or to one API, basically. Like, as an end payment method, you might want to add this functionality at some point, but there's really, like, a couple of reasons, basically, why even if you might make that change, it might not get adopted, or it's not your core business model, and so on and so forth.
How long does it usually take for changes in the API to be introduced to PPro's backend?
So this really depends on the complexity of the scheme. We do have some schemes where really it's you know, basically they change their API version from, you know, 5 to 6, and say all the changes that happen in there are optional. So then we can, you know, technically just upgrade and say, yes, you know, we upgrade also from 5 to 6, but we don't actually do anything else. So that's like a 2-minute effort. Obviously, what we as PPro strive for is always have the latest and greatest functionality. And that can really vary between, you know, again, like these 2 minutes to 3 months, let's say half a year, if they completely change the way their flow works. A good example would be Ideal, where, you know, I described the normal flow earlier, the normal payment flow earlier. But now they've added last year a new way of paying using mobile and using QR codes, where you basically take your mobile phone, and on the merchant's page, you also have the like a QR code displayed, and you make a picture of that QR code basically, and then get redirected to the Ideal app basically. And you know, obviously now in this case, you are kind of like just combining the desktop flow with the QR code mobile flow. So and then all have to fit that into like one model basically. So obviously this is a little bit more effort, and that would take easily multiple months.
And what is the threat for fraud and redirection? Like, if you're opening up a new page from Amazon and you're getting redirected to a new URL, is there also potential for some third party to come in and steal your information, or is that less likely?
That is a good question, and there is the potential for that. And this is one of the advantages of having seen different payment methods and you know, kind of like trying to understand how they fit into the picture. So what we and PPro do quite frequently is work with our partners to improve their security if we see some flaws there. So as an example, we recently had one API integration where we saw that the transaction flow itself, that was quite secure, and there's like different mechanisms like encryption, combined secret passwords basically, and so on and so forth, which you can utilize. And so they had all of these mechanisms in place for the transaction flow. But they had, for whatever reason, forgotten one particular piece on the refund flow. And so we basically pointed this out to them that, hey, yeah, your transaction flow looks really fine. But, you know, for the refund flow, we are a little bit concerned that there's one piece of security missing here from our perspective. They acknowledged that and actually changed it then as well. And, you know, we're really happy with the feedback. So this is an advantage for a company like PPro, who has been in the market for a while, who has you know, seen a lot of different integrations and can also, you know, work with the partner or with the scheme to prove the security features, basically. So to summarize, you can make it secure, but you have to know what you're doing.
Let's talk about how the merchant actually sets up their checkout page. So a merchant wants to accept Ideal in the Netherlands or Alipay from China.
Mm-hmm.
They go to a PSP.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens?
So this is about the onboarding process, basically. So yeah. the way it works normally, the merchant hopefully has a good relationship with the PSP, and they come up together with you know, the markets that are relevant for the merchant, and then the PSP gives some input into what you know, payment methods are actually relevant for these particular markets. Normally, there is some kind of onboarding process, you know, KYC process, where the merchant has to be vetted then by the PSP. And once that has been done, you are at the technical integration level. Depending on what system the merchant uses, super easy or not so easy, the easiest way to do it is if you are, as a merchant, you use some kind of like standard e-commerce system. So there's like these kind of like plug-and-play systems called Magento. For example, Magento is the most popular one. Called WooCommerce is another one, for example, where really you have the whole e-commerce solution for you in place already. And then the PSP kind of like provides a plug-in for Magento, for WooCommerce, so that then the merchant's e-commerce platform can basically talk to that particular PSP. And this is really just a matter of, you know, him kind of like either downloading a file and putting it in like a particular folder, or maybe even like clicking a checkbox or something like that, and just entering and having a configuration dialog where he has to enter his password and his like username or something like that. This is the easiest way to do it if you are using this kind of standard e-commerce framework. If you don't use that, or the PSP for your particular framework doesn't actually provide any kind of out-of-the-box plugin, you would then probably get an API specification. So this could be like a PDF document from the PSP, which explains how to talk to their system. And your technical team would then basically have to take this API specification and implement it. And depending on the complexity, depending on, you know, again, what kind of security features are in there, for example, this can take from, I would say, half a day to, again, multiple weeks, even months potentially.
You might have to have technical knowledge, but if you're using one of the mainstream websites and using a larger PSP, it's quite easy to technically integrate APIs.
Yes.
Okay.
Most of the time.
And when you are at checkout, when you buy something online,
mm-hmm.
do you ever notice that you're using something that you helped design?
Yes. And that's actually quite cool, right? And that's also, you know, one of the ways how I can, for example, explain to my family what I'm actually working on. I think the one thing to keep in mind, though, is that in our case, in the case of PPRO, we are not a PSP that directly works with merchants, but we work with other PSPs. So we are a white label solution, not competing with other PSPs for merchants in the space. And that basically means for us in particular, we have one additional layer of indirection. Technically, this doesn't make much of a difference, but it does mean that we are not very visible in merchant systems normally. So I know that I'm actually using our systems and going through our systems, but it might actually, and it's intentional, not be obvious to the consumer on the website.
Thanks again for joining me today. That was a lot of fun, and thank you for sharing your technical knowledge.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks very much for listening. And a reminder that you can follow PPRO on Twitter and Instagram at PPRO_group. Until next time.